What in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
Independent MP Mark Latham joins me this afternoon, as he does each and every Thursday afternoon. Hello, Mark.
G'day, Brent. Always good to chat.
You're in Parliament, so we'll talk until the bells ring, then we'll take a break.
Oh, no bells. We've got budget estimates, so they don't ring bells for that, so we've got a free run.
Mark, let's start with the talk about asylum seekers, of course. Over the weekend, 40 asylum seekers arrived off the coast of Western Australia. Lots has been said and written about it. I note that the former Immigration Department Deputy Secretary, Abdul Rizvi, he spoke earlier in the week about the 40 asylum seekers who landed in WA. He was questioned on radio whether it was possible that more boats will arrive because of the group's success. He thinks that's a possibility. Peter Dutton thinks that that's a possibility, but the government, they say no. They say that people like Abdul Rizvi and Peter Dutton are escalating, and it's all rhetoric, and it's not going to happen.
Well, I think common sense would tell you a couple of things. One, if a single boat gets through, it's an encouragement for the people smugglers to do it again, isn't it? They sail these boats to try and get to mainland Australia. They've been successful in one case, so they're thinking we can do it again and again. So that's an obvious worry. But the people smugglers are also looking at two other things, the dreadful High Court decision to release those criminal asylum seekers into the community, and the government's failure to control that. And the third factor is the government's abolition of temporary protection visas, which again makes it more appealing for these asylum seekers to pay the people smugglers to try to get to Australia. Now, what is a temporary protection visa? Well, under refugee conventions and the like, coming to a country and seeking asylum and protection from all the dreadful things happening in your home country, it doesn't automatically lead to residential status. And the temporary protection visa was invented by the Howard government to say, well, look, if things settle down in your home country and you're no longer under threat, you can go back there. So your protection visa in Australia is only temporary. The Albanese government got rid of that. So the protection visa is permanent, and people can stay here forever. No possibility of, or very few possibilities of going back if the circumstances change and it's safe to go back in their home country. So all of that is very appealing, along with the news Peter Dutton has propagated that we haven't got as many patrols and as many resources in the vast waters between Australia and Indonesia trying to detect these boats, because most certainly you can't turn them around if you can't find them.
Your thoughts on how the Honourable Andrew Giles MP, Minister for Immigration, is handling his portfolio, Mark?
Well, dreadfully, people who've watched Question Time know that he's not up to the job. Why is he in the job? Albanese has him as a left-wing factional ally. They used to work at Labor Party conferences to try and get rid of tough border protection. And back in the day when Albanese was aligned with Carmen Lawrence, he was against offshore detention. So effectively, Albanese over the years has been against all the key elements of Operation Sovereign Borders that stopped the boats under the Abbott government, and those three elements are offshore detention at places like Nauru, turning around boats when it's safe to do so, and the temporary protection visas. So Albanese has been against and soft on all those things over the years, so it's hardly surprising that this one boat has arrived, and fearfully we might get more.
Minister Giles made a rather large mistake when, instead of just releasing that one detainee, which is what the ruling was all about, the ruling from the High Court was just on one detainee. Instead of just releasing the one detainee, he made the decision to release all of the detainees. And of course, that would have got back to Indonesia and places like that very, very quickly. And there's stories that have come out today where this news has gone back, and the boat people are saying, look, they're showing news reports from what's going on in Australia, saying, come on, we can get you there now, we can get you to Australia, you won't be detained.
Yeah, Minister Giles released all the detainees when the High Court only wanted or required one to be released. and had yet to publish its reasons. So they could have waited many weeks until the reasons were published, analysed those, and made a different decision. So, yeah, it was a panicked act of folly, or maybe they just thought they wanted them all out. They don't like detaining people. I've been at these Labor Party conferences. Left-wing Labor factional people like Albanese and Giles don't like detaining asylum seekers. They think it's inhumane, it's not compassionate, it's not consistent with Labor values. You hear all that talk over the years, but what happened under Rudd and Gillard, over 1,000 of the asylum seekers drowned because of the illegal boat people, boat smuggler trade. And that is an act of barbarism. To have women and children drowning in the waters between Australia and Indonesia is obviously terrible. And all that left-wing rhetoric blew up in their face. But, you know, they believe this stuff and they continue it to this day.
This morning, the opposition Home Affairs spokesman, his name is James Patterson, he was talking about the approval of these 2,000 visas to Palestinian residents since the start of the Israel's war with Hamas. Home Affairs officials said the processing time, the average processing time for the visas across all countries was, what, 24 hours or something like that. So they've processed all these visas in a 24-hour period.
Well, it's hard to believe you can do a proper security check on these applicants in the space of one day. Shouldn't it take several weeks to check in detail whether or not they pose any security and safety risk here in Australia? Now, that's not being hard on anyone. That's just being thorough in the preservation of community safety. So I think Senator Patterson's raised a really good point. They've rushed the processing of these 2,000 Palestinians, and they needed to take a lot more time to at least give the Australian public a guarantee it had been done thoroughly. So yet again, it's another weakening of border protection processes under the Albanese government that raises public concern and worries about things that are even worse in practice. So, you know, good on Patterson for keeping the government accountable, and they should slow down the process and make sure all the checks and security guarantees are in place.
We had a caller this afternoon, his name being Mark. He has... It's taken him 4 years and cost him $20,000+ to get his now wife to come to Australia from overseas. She will, I believe it's March 13, she'll finally become an Australian citizen. But before that, to get her here so that they could get married, it took him 2 years and cost him a minimum of $20,000, he was saying this afternoon.
Yeah, this is what has always been the objection. You go back to the time of Tampa and the Howard government, a lot of the objection has been not just about the problem with people smugglers and illegal trade and the lack of safety and the drownings of these people. People who've been through the front door, you know, made the right application for migration, took years, it took forever, it took a lot of cost, legal advice, they all regard the processing of other applicants in one day or people who arrive illegally on our coastline as queue jumpers. You don't hear that expression much in the public debate, but going back 20 years ago, the objection was always that, well, these people are queue jumpers. I've gone through the caller that you mentioned, gone through the process the right way through the front door, filled out the forms legally, all the things that was expected of me. Took 2 years. How can people get in the country in the space of one day? Why are they jumping the queue and I've been punished? So, you know, this has never been, there's never been a lot of sympathy for the asylum seeker issue among migrant communities that have taken a lot longer at a lot greater expense to get their relatives, their loved ones into Australia.
In the last 24, 48 hours, I suppose, ever since the Four Corners show on Monday night, there's been a lot of talk about, hi, I'm Brad from Woolworths. Brad has stepped down from his top job. This followed the train wreck interview on the ABC Four Corners, allegations of price gouging and a controversy over the retailer's decision to drop Australia Day merchandise. I think that it started with that, the decision made by Woolworths to drop the Australia Day merchandise, and then maybe the straw that broke the camel's back, as the saying goes, Mark, was the train wreck interview with Brad Banducci from Woolworths on Monday night.
Yeah, well, when Brad signed off his newspaper advertisement, virtually of apology, saying, oh, yeah, we abolished all the Australia Day merchandise, but somehow we still support Australia Day, he didn't put his surname on there. But everyone knows him now out of the price gouging interview, and as you say, the train wreck where he walked out on the ABC Interviewer, and they know this Brad Bonucci, and he's leaving Woolworths. So he's made some bad calls on both fronts, the price gouging, the inability to face up to the interview, and the disastrous decision he made about Australia Day. So maybe the pressure's got to him, and he's a liability to Woolworths, and he's on the way out, and it's sort of the confirmation of something we often say, Brent, that go woke, go broke. And I'm sure he regrets what he did on Australia Day. There was no need for that company to change anything. And, of course, he couldn't defend their pricing practices, so he's out the door.
Mark, do you think this may be the start of, companies, and we can look at Qantas as well, and all the other big-name companies, you know, banks, etc., CBA, that supported the Voice and came out and were part of the full-page advertisements and were on telly with the advertisements? Do you think this is the start of these companies realising that the Australian public really don't care what their opinion of, Australia Day is, or they don't care what their opinion of the Voice is? They've just really basically got one job, and in the Woolworths situation or the Coles situation, that's to sell groceries.
Yeah, that's always been the public opinion. I think the public's always been amazed that these companies that have a charter for selling products efficiently at a reasonable price with good customer service somehow got into politics. And nobody that I know that uses any of these companies, pays for the service, has had any understanding of why they needed to go political. What has the Voice got to do with selling groceries? What has the Voice got to do with running an airline? And those questions have never been answered. This has always been an indulgence of the management of companies that haven't got a lot of competition against them. That's a characteristic because of the Woolworths Coles duopoly. These grocery companies have got into politics because of the airline near monopoly that Qantas have had in Australia. They've got into politics. They haven't had market competition against them, and the management has undertaken the indulgence of getting into political debates that have got nothing to do with the company's mandate or purpose. But eventually it's caught up with them, and one by one these CEOs are going. That's a good thing, and hopefully their successors learn the lesson that if you stick to the corporate charter, which is to sell products at a fair price with good customer service, you're going to have a longer career than getting into political debates like the one about Australia Day that have got nothing to do with why your company actually exists.
Julian Assange, founder, WikiLeaks founder, could be extradited to the United States within days to face prosecution on those espionage charges relating to the publication of thousands of classified military and diplomatic documents concerning the Afghanistan and Iraq wars. After 2 days of legal arguments, judges of the High Court in London will now consider whether to grant Julian Assange permission to appeal against his removal from the UK. But the court's advised there will be no ruling on the appeal before March 5. And it was well documented that Julian Assange was not well, and he actually didn't attend the court for this hearing.
Well, if he goes to the United States, we'll never see him again. That's the bottom line. The United States are going to lock him up for good. And that's a reality that Anthony Albanese needs to take on. There was a parliamentary debate and vote in Canberra where overwhelmingly the parliament was saying, bring Assange, an Australian citizen, back to Australia and we'll deal with him. And my view is that he's not everyone's cup of tea, but after 12 years of losing his freedom in the UK, which started when he sought asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy, 12 years is enough for what he's done, and he should be brought back to Australia as an Australian citizen and probably given some community service and observation and the like to make sure he never does it again. So I'm disappointed that Albanese hasn't taken a stronger stance with Joe Biden to say we don't want him to go to the United States. He's an Australian citizen who, after 12 long years, and obviously these health problems in losing his freedom, should come back to Australia and we'll deal with him fairly into the future. But if he goes to the US, they're going to lock him up forever and we'll never see him again. And I just think that's excessive.
And we're talking to Mark Latham this afternoon. Mark, it seems as though the New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns, has conceded that the ambitious plan to turn Rosehill Racecourse into this mini city of 25,000 homes, complete with an extra metro station, it may not even get off the ground.
Well, it's looking that way. We've just had budget estimates with the racing minister, who was as useful as pockets in your underpants in dealing with this. He basically said he can't offer an opinion. He's the racing minister, and it's the biggest decision for the future of racing New South Wales in our lifetime. the sale of Rose Hill, the second most valuable asset we've got for thoroughbred racing in the state. So David Harris, the racing minister, completely lost all credibility that he's basically not involved and not saying anything about it, that which is in itself is incredible. Why is he taking his ministerial salary for doing nothing? But the threshold question is, will the 51% of the members of the Australian Turf Club, of which I'm a member, agree to the sale of this asset? And you've had Gay Waterhouse and Chris Waller, by far the two biggest names and respected figures in racing in New South Wales, coming out very hostile to it. Chris Waller, who's a lovely man and normally so mild-mannered, has come out and said that the racing club should give itself an uppercut. You know, very un-Waller-like language. So there's hostility to it. They haven't done their work. And remarkably, we also found out this morning at Estimates that the proposal itself is yet to be lodged with the government. You know, Min said this was his big housing initiative on the 7th of December. Nearly 3 months later, the ATC hasn't even put the proposal in. So they've got this process wrong end up. It's upside down. And they needed to pass some basic tests, and the first one was, will the ATC membership give 51% approval to it? And I think that's now highly unlikely.
Well, what do they normally say in a news bulletin? And now in sport, Mark, the Bunnies have touched down in Los Angeles. I was reading all about these matches that are going to happen, and I saw one of the comments, and I did laugh. It said, 150 rugby league players descending on Las Vegas. What could go wrong?
But they've got a squillion security guards or something around them, haven't they? They're not being treated as proper adults. They're being treated as fugitives or little kids that need to be guarded. You know, I'm sure everyone's read them the Riot Act about being on their best behaviour and not having any international incidents out of it. It's a bold adventure, isn't it? Your team's playing against Manly, and your old coach Seabold has given the Rabbits a rev up for saying they're not promoting the Las Vegas games on Sunday week because the Rabbits camp is in San Diego. So, you know, that's not great publicity. But it's a bold venture to try and break into the American sporting market, which is dominated by gridiron, basketball, baseball, ice hockey. You know, they're big, big ventures. But if they can pull it off, the TV rights are so lucrative, it'll be one of the most amazing expansions in the history of Australian sports. So we'll all enjoy the doubleheader games there at the arena where they played the Super Bowl recently, and we'll see whether the Americans warm to the idea of a collision sport without helmets and without all that padding.
Am I right in saying that this is not the first time this has happened? If we go back to 1978, I think, Manly, it was fondly remembered, Manly v. Wests, which then were the Magpies. That was a game in the United States around 1978, and it was abandoned early in the game because of an all-in brawl. Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, I remember they were bloodbath matches when Roy Masters had the West Magpies and they took on the Silvertails. It was Fibro versus Silvertails, and every game was a bloodbath at Lidcombe Oval or that one in the United States. But there was also a State of Origin game, I think, in the mid-80s, played in the United States. And whenever we played rugby league there, it's only ever been seen as a weird novelty to the American sporting public. Whether they go better in Las Vegas on Sunday week, we'll have to wait and see. But the past matches have been a problem when the game's called off because of too much violence, or the State of Origin match that attracted very little interest. They've got a big mountain to climb.
But if they can climb that mountain, and Mr. Volandis is behind it, and this is not the first, this is not the first thing he's taken. He's got this knack of making things happen and being underestimated, I must say that.
Yeah, he has, and he steered rugby league through the COVID period with some success, and they've had expansion with the Dolphins up there in Queensland and the like, but this is on a much bigger scale than any of that. And Volandis in racing has run the Everest and a few other attraction race meetings in Sydney. But this is a much bigger task to break into the American sporting market. So I don't think Superman can do it, let alone Peter Volandis.
All right, good to talk to you, Mike. We'll let you get back to budget estimates. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Always. Thanks.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye. That's Mark Latham, Independent MP in New South Wales. It's